This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. This past month was Christmas for gamers with the release of Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, Assassin's Creed Origins, and Super Mario Odyssey. Joining me to review these titles and to speak about the upcoming games we should be on the lookout for in November is Reviews and Previews Editor of EGM Now, Ray Carcello. Thanks for joining me, Ray.
Thanks for having me, Mason.
A game that's come out and everybody was super excited about it, and I was too, was Super Mario Odyssey. Could you tell us the story behind it for those that didn't play it?
So Super Mario Odyssey is the latest in the 3D platformers from, of course, the Super Mario Brothers series. It follows in the same vein as Mario 64 and Mario Sunshine. And then this one, it's not really an original plot. It's Bowser trying to kidnap the princess, and actually successfully does. And this time he wants to marry her. And to do that, he's gotten two special characters from the Cap Kingdom. And the Cap Kingdom has basically all these sentient hats, and so he got Tiara and Cappy. And Tiara, he's going to put on Princess Peach, and Cappy, he's going to wear himself in this fancy white tuxedo. But of course, Mario is going to stop him, and what ends up happening is Bowser loses Cappy. Cappy joins Mario, and basically after Mario loses his trademark cap, and Cappy reveals that I can help you find a way to get to Bowser's new airship if you'll let me join you, and then you can use my powers to get all the fuel that you'll need for your new special ship, the Odyssey, to get to that airship and have a spectacular air battle against Bowser.
That's kind of a cute storyline. One of the things I noticed about this game is that there are no lives. I mean, why is that? I kind of expected, because I did do this, I jumped off the cliff and got rid of all my coins just to see what would happen, and nothing. I mean, yeah, why'd they do that? No lives now?
Yeah, well, I think it's just that they're trying to lower the barrier of entry even more for Mario and to make it so that people just want to have fun, and they felt that the live system, I think people got too worried about finding one-ups and about collecting 100 coins and all this other stuff. So I think that they wanted people to enjoy the world. They wanted people to enjoy the story, and I think they wanted to focus on all the crazy mayhem that you could do with Cappy over the course of the game. So I think they wanted to focus more on the gameplay and just have people worry less about the whole collecting one-ups and collecting coins and just have as much fun as possible in any way that they wanted. So I think it was just a matter of giving people a little more freedom.
That's a good point. Did you play it? Did you like the game?
I thought it was great.
I did, too. I thought it was really cute. I was having so much fun just putting my hat on everything, and it took me forever to complete even, like, the first few stages because I was doing that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. There's dozens of enemies that you can take control of with Cappy, because Cappy allows you to possess different things, and, like, whether it's classic characters like Goombas, or there's even the T-Rex that you can take control of for a little while. It's really all about having fun and having at it. And I thought it handled great. I thought it felt like it felt like the old Mario platformers of old. Yeah, it was just a ton of fun.
Now, another game that I was really looking forward to and I was having so much fun playing is Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus. And I wanted you to tell me, what did you think of the game?
You know, I think it was a step forward for the series. There's some good things and some bad things. I think the story was interesting because if you play the game, it almost feels like it's two games in one, where, like, the first half of the game is kind of, like, wrapping up the storyline from the last game, and then you kind of really get involved and really get going again with the new adventure. So I thought that was interesting. But I think in terms of gameplay, I think of being able to mix and match your dual wielding was a big deal. I like the new, Uber Commanders that you have to find later in the game. And I think that it just added a nice level of gameplay. And of course, I think the story was really, really something, this alternate universe where the Nazis won. And you know, it's always great to shoot a Nazi and punch a Nazi in the face. So I think Wolfenstein delivers that in spades.
Yeah, you know, the dual wielding, I really like that because, you know, anytime I play like a first person shooter, I always want to do something really exaggerated with my guns and just spray it all over the place. But one of the things I noticed, and I haven't finished it yet because I just take my time when it comes to Bethesda games, but I have read comments that this game was too short. Is that true?
You know, it was shorter than the first game. I mean, the main campaign was only about 10 to 12 hours, which for me was shorter than, I think it's like 5 to 6 hours shorter than the last game. And also, I mean, it has no multiplayer. So, I mean, sure, there are a lot of hidden secrets and things for you to go back and find. And there is the replay, I would say the replay value for this game is a little higher than the last game, but that is a significant amount shorter compared to the last game. And I do think that was a bit of a disappointment.
Do you think that there's going to be like a DLC for it? Is that why it was this short?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the last game had the Old Blood DLC, which was a great add-on. But I wouldn't be surprised if they came out with at least one piece of story content that comes out with this, whether it's a prequel sort of content like the Old Blood was for the New Order, or if it's something that continues the storyline. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to see DLC with this.
Speaking of DLCs, I know this next game is going to have a bunch of them. It's Assassin's Creed Origins. What did you think of this game?
Yeah, I thought this was a return to form for Assassins. This was really, it was a return to form, but it also had a lot of new stuff that really kind of pushed the series forward. It really seems like the year they took off after being an annual franchise for 7 years, I think really, really helped them to hone what they wanted to do. And I was personally very, very worried because they added a lot of RPG elements to it. But I found that the RPG elements actually, they were well balanced. I never found myself really grinding that much. I really found, and I found that Bayek, who is the main character in this game, ends up, he has a really natural progression. If you follow the story and you do the little side quests as they pop up, you'll find that you really shouldn't hit too many walls with this game. And I think that was really a great thing. So it was both, you know, it both scratched that RPG itch, which was a surprise, where I basically had to go and collect everything and beat all the side quests. But it also had classic Assassin's action and a really classic Assassin's story that really, for me, was great because it continued and finally moves forward the narrative of the series that had kind of gotten stagnant in the last couple of games.
I'm always confused when it comes to Assassin's Creed. Like, it's the story for me, it's like after, I think, Assassin's Creed 3, like the 2012 one, like everything was said and done. And then the Black Flag came out and it was like, okay, it just feels like it's just like an Assassin's Creed game. And after that, it kind of feels the same way. With Assassin's Creed Origin, do they ever go back and talk about the, it's the Animus, right? Or Artemis?
Yeah, the Animus, yeah. So they go back, that was the nice thing is that basically there is a modern era segment, and that modern era segment allows, it basically expands the world again, is that you take over as a brand new character. Her name's Layla Hassan. And when you take over her, you find out that she's basically an ex-Abstergo agent with an axe to grind. She's this brilliant engineer. She builds her own Animus, or she tweaks the one that was. And they actually found a way somehow to make the movie make sense even in this game by tying it back in. If you read all the documents that Layla has, you'll see things that actually clear things up between the movie and the video game series and kind of bridge that gap. But then it kind of sets the story up for the future, because now we have this new modern day protagonist, and she's kind of an anti-hero. She's kind of got a mean streak to her, but she wants the greater good. She wants to help people. She does have a heart. She does care, but she's got like an edge to her. And she basically is, you know, setting up to become she's going to become a new assassin, and she's going to join the assassins, and, you know, it really kind of give people that modern storyline and keep pushing that forward, that narrative of throughout time and throughout history, and even now, the assassins are taking on the Templars, even though the Templars now call themselves Abstergo.
I love how convoluted it gets as the series goes on, but I love that they're attempting, like, we're going to make everything fit and work out in the end.
Yeah, I was amazed that they were able to find a way to make the movie make sense.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they even make fun of Jeremy Irons in it, which was great. Where his character, anyway, be like, who wears a cape to a big gala? Can you just, you're just screaming that you're the bad guy.
You know, when it comes to any of my games, I always play them on console, but I was reading that there's a lot of problems with Assassin's Creed Origins on PC. Do you know anything about that?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they've notoriously had issues with bringing games to PC in the past. I'm sure they're going to patch it out. I'm sure they're going to find a way to smooth things out. They did it with Unity. They did it with Syndicate. It's unfortunate. You wonder why they don't just go the route of some other developers and just hold on to the PC build for another month or 2 months potentially. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's been a bit buggy. I mean, I played on PlayStation 4 and there was a couple of bugs, but nothing like crazy and nothing too game breaking. But I've heard it's a lot worse on PC, and I know these folks at Ubisoft and Ubisoft Montreal are going to be hard at work squashing those bugs.
It sucks when you're playing on your PC and it just crashes like that. I mean, I would hope they would get that stuff fixed really fast. Either that, somebody should just go out and buy it on their console and just say hell with it.
Yeah, I know everybody has their preference, you know, and I've always been a console guy. I never really appreciated anybody, any group of folks that refers to them as the Master Race. So, you know, when PC players always call themselves PC Master Race, I've always kind of shied away from that. That's their preference, that's their decision, and whatever they decide to, it's a shame, but, you know, it is what it is, and that's sometimes the problem with PC, too, is you can optimize a game for a certain set of specs, but if somebody doesn't meet those specs, well, then at what point is it the developer's fault, and what point is it the consumer, so.
Yeah, you know, loyalty is a thing that runs so deep when it comes to gaming, because there are the PlayStation loyalists, the Xbox loyalists, the Nintendo loyalists. People will scream from the, you know, the hilltops, my console or my PC is better than the rest of you guys.
Yeah. I have no console preferences, but I definitely, like I said, I lean console over PC.
I'm just curious about this. Recently, at least I've noticed it recently, and it's probably been going on a lot longer than that. Developers are now announcing their games and the DLC at the same time. Isn't that kind of like, why don't you just put the DLC in the game already if it's not released?
It's a double-edged sword, right? There's two sides to each story. They do that to obviously try and give people, enticement, right? If you really love the main game, we're going to have more stuff coming for it so that you can keep playing it, you can keep immersing yourself in this world, and you can, you know, and their hope is that a lot of these people are trying to build a community around the game. So that's part of the reason why they're like, look, we're going to have all this content, we're going to roll all this stuff out. The unfortunate thing is, a lot of times, not always, but I would say 90% of the time, you have to pay more for that DLC. So I think it's a couple of things where it's also the game developers. You know, game development costs have only continued to rise over the years. Teams have gotten bigger, studios have gotten bigger, and as they've gotten bigger, they need to have more revenue sources coming in. And there are some games that can find different ways. You know, you'll see in a lot of games, especially from EA, where they have a lot of product placement. You'll have that, and you'll have other things, but they need to sell the DLC because for the amount of man hours that a DLC pack will cost them, if they sell a certain amount, they don't even have to sell as like 100% worth, you know, with the games. They only have to sell maybe if they sell 25 for every unit they sell, for every four units they sell, if they sell one piece of DLC with that, then it basically it's kind of worth it for them. So it's just another way to kind of, you know, mitigate the cost of making a game nowadays because it's gotten so expensive. And that's why you see there's such a huge gap between the indie scene and the AAA scene. And that's why an indie game will take 10 years and a AAA game will take a year and a half.
Yeah. You know, you said like developers, they need to have like another revenue source, and you know, they have DLCs, they have the game, and now they're coming out with loot boxes. Isn't that kind of unfair? Like when you as a consumer, now it's like, oh, you want me to pay to win?
In the pay to win scenario, I agree. Yes. Obviously, loot boxes are terrible when it's basically you need to spend more money in order to get better gear, in order to perform better online. I mean, Activision is notorious for this. They supposedly they just came up with a patent where they're purposely trying to match higher-ranked players with lower-ranked players so that lower-ranked players can see the higher-ranked players' great year, and in the hopes of getting the lower-ranked players to spend money in order to catch up to the higher-ranked players instead of grinding for it. You know, I mean, there are some nefarious people out there who are purposely trying to, and that's in Destiny, by the way, no surprise. You know, and it's in Call of Duty a little bit too, but Destiny was kind of it's a core thing there. And then they're trying to, they're trying to find different ways to get people to spend money in order to, as we like to say in the internet, get good. And, you know, if they can squeeze people for an extra dollar here, an extra $5 there, they're going to do it. I mean, the only time I'll say loot boxes aren't the worst thing in the world is when it's purely cosmetic. There are games like Overwatch, for example, where it's purely cosmetic. There's no benefit. You can play the whole game no matter what. You don't have to buy anything if you don't want to. It's purely up to you if you want to buy loot boxes that'll give you extra costumes potentially and voice lines and things like that. And at that point, personally, I feel a fool and their money are soon parted.
Well, I must be a fool because I do buy the skins. I'm not going to lie. I get multiple costumes.
Oh, Mason, no. You got to grind.
I can't help it. I can't help it. It's like, oh, $5 laying around. Oh, I need a new costume. Everybody needs a new costume.
I've personally never gotten into it. I don't think I've ever bought cosmetic stuff.
Really? Oh, you know, I can't help it. Like, with certain games, it's kind of like the legendary ones. If I know that, like in League of Legends, I know this skin is not going to be around for very long. It's a limited time, and it may not be, like, around again for another year. I'll grab it. You know, it's like, $5 here again. I don't mind spending $5 on BS that I like to play. But you know what? It's so funny about that matchmaking. That has happened to me in World of Warcraft. When I did play, I would go into other, and it wasn't a matchmaking system at the time, but I would still go into like raids with people, and their characters were like so decked out. And I'm like, okay, now I have to finish endgame just to get that gear. So I can see how they're like this whole loot box thing could work, because you do, it's not about being jealous, but it's like, I want to be just as good. People recognize that gear and they're like, oh, wow, you got that gear. That means that you defeated such and such boss. So I can see why a lot of people would want to do loot boxes and pay for it, because it is a bit of a recognition even that, hey, you got the cash to play.
Yeah, it's a status symbol. You know, it's like I drive, you know, driving around here in LA, it's like you'll see some of the poorest people with the nicest cars because it puts forward that status symbol. That, or at least that facade, that they've spent X amount of money, that they have this, and that means that they intrinsically have this sort of this value, whether it's in the community or whether it's in real life. Like I said, like somebody, you know, can't feed their kids, but for some reason they're driving a Lamborghini down Ventura Boulevard, or you're pouring money into Destiny or World of Warcraft or whatever to try and get that special limited edition skin to show people, hey, look. This is me. This is what I've done, and this is how hardcore I am when it comes to our culture.
You're right. It is about being hardcore. It's like, oh, I'm not a casual man.
That's right. Exactly. Nobody wants to get labeled as a casual.
Even though you know you are, don't play.
Noob.
You're so funny. You know, what other games are coming out in November, though? Is there anything standing out for other people to really keep an eye out for?
Well, I mean, it, fortunately, things are going to start slowing down, but at least the beginning of November, we've got Call of Duty that's coming out, Call of Duty World War II. We've got Star Wars Battlefront 2. We've got the new Need for Speed. And also, we've got the Xbox One X launching. So... it's got really no special software for it, but it's launching. So, those are the hot ticket items that are coming out in November to keep an eye out for.
Okay, is the Xbox One, is it coming out with a new skin? Should I be getting that one too?
The Xbox One X right now, every Xbox One X will look the same as every other Xbox One X right now. But I'm sure at some point they'll put out alternate colors and it'll be all that other fun stuff. But unless you have a 4K television and unless you absolutely positively need a new console, I would probably hold off on the Xbox One X right now.
Well, Ray, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find you at?
They can find me on Twitter at Ray Carcillo, Instagram Ray Carcillo, Facebook RayCarcillo.voice. Also, of course, you can read all my reviews and previews and all the other editorial stuff that I do on EGMNow.com. And also on EGMNow at Twitter. So that's where you can find me.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.